The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
KNUS Denver, a Salem Media Group station.
He is an Army veteran.
Duty, honor, country.
And former district attorney for Colorado's 18th Judicial District.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Most important, he's a father and a proud American.
Americans love a winner.
He is George Brockler. And this is The George Show on News Talk 710 KNUS.
I'm brought to you courtesy of
everything that guy just says, bull.
Welcome back, 710 KNUS. George Brockler here with his big fat thumbs on his phone. I will tell you that when I'm texting out a number to a VIP caller, invariably I hit one digit off. And if you've ever tried to use a phone, you know that that actually gets you to the wrong place. So I've done that again this morning. That is 100% my fault. But until she's on the line, we're just going to blame Kristen, even though it is my fault. You and I know that, but when Kristen gets on, we'll just blame her. We are here to talk with a superstar, wicked smart CEO of Common Sense Institute, which you can find at commonsenseinstituteco.com. Had her on before. We've had a bunch of people that help in these studies before. It puts out just a unique nonpartisan product. It's all about the numbers and the research, and it tells a story that is important for us to consider separate from all the political noise. And so I'm happy to have back on with us right now Kristen Strom. Kristen, thanks for joining us.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for letting me on. I thought that I maybe wasn't going to be able to join you today.
How did you screw up that number? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, and frankly, the idea, too, that I got that was like, hey, Kristen would love to come on in the early 7 o'clock hour. I'm like, that is amazing, because usually, as you can imagine, on these very coveted hours of 6 to 9 a.m. on Saturday, people are like, can I come on at like 8:55? You know, because they'd like to stay in bed a little bit more. This is impressive. Thanks for doing it.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Now, listen, there's a Colorado competitiveness study. I hope I'm giving that the right name, that your organization has put together. And it has gone through, and I'll let you describe it, but it has really laid out sort of a story of what the hurdles are for business in front of us. Talk about what you guys were doing here.
Yeah, so what we did is we looked back and analyzed the cumulative impacts over the last several years of new fat taxes, fees, regulations. And what we found is that Colorado job creators are being crushed. We're being hit with $1.8 billion in new taxes, fees, regulations. And the new costs are really building. Just as many businesses in our state are struggling to stay open and create the jobs that we badly need. So I think that, you know, as uncertainty still is looming amidst the pandemic, the question is to ask is how is Colorado going to recover and lead the way out of this recession like we have in previous recessions?
You start off by laying out sort of the where are we right now numbers, and they're a little predictable in terms of you knew they weren't going to be good, but some of these things are much worse than I thought. You talked about a 5.4% cut in the number of jobs, 150,000 fewer jobs, but they're not shared across all industries equally.
Yeah, it really doesn't take a rocket scientist or even a CSI economist to point out that the picture for business across our state today is not pretty. So a few key metrics that we're looking at that I think really tell the story that you just alluded to. We've lost 150,000 jobs in our state. State taxable sales are down almost $9 billion. And as of February 10th, small business revenue is down 30%. And the perhaps biggest number that I think indicates that Colorado perhaps is not positioned very well coming out of this recession is that at the end of 2020, our unemployment rate increased by the second highest percentage in the nation. We went from 2.5% unemployment rate to 8.5%, and our state overall's ranking went from fourth best to almost last 48th in terms of unemployment rate. And I don't have to tell you this, George, but we cannot recover without jobs. And to put it in perspective even a little bit more, our unemployment rate is now worse than Illinois. It's worse than New York. Worse than New Jersey. It's worse than Michigan. And all of those states, they actually had higher unemployment rates than Colorado in 2019, which makes this stat even worse.
I cannot imagine what we did to put ourselves. I guess I can't imagine. And you guys don't tackle that in this study, right? Like, this isn't about, hey, laying blame for this. That's really for the wicked smart radio pundits to say. And of course, I blame many of the decisions made by our Oh, no, they didn't do this. It was all emergency power stuff. Anyway, I think that the next step is important, and that is you then say, okay, look, here's where we're at. We're in this deep, deep hole. We're 48th in unemployment. And now, how do we climb out of this? And what are the other things, the yoke around our neck, if you're a small business person that's holding you back? What are the things you discovered?
Yeah, I mean, the idea that Colorado is doing well when relatively more of our people are unemployed compared to every other state is foolish. And then you layer on the fact that the state has added billions of dollars in new taxes and fees that job creators are being forced to deal with on top of everything else. I mean, that really in itself is setting us up for potentially a slower, weaker recovery than we've ever experienced. And let me just touch on a few of those $1.8 billion in new taxes and fees. Perhaps one of the bigger ones that I want to make sure your listeners are aware of is our unemployment insurance trust fund, which is completely upside down. By July 1st, which is our new fiscal calendar date, the fund will be over $1 billion in debt. And just to catch up over the next 3 years, total employer taxes for the fund are projected to grow annually over 22%. So we know that the state's mismanaged this fund for quite some time.
How are they mismanaging it? And is it an automatic adjustment? Is it one of those things where, hey, you don't have to keep coming back to the voters? It's just whatever hole exists automatically gets dumped on employers.
Exactly. So this isn't an academic exercise. This isn't some obscure fund that voters and Coloradans don't need to be worried about. The law requires taxes to be increased on business to replenish the fund automatically when the balances are low. So this is going to be an automatic tax. And to your previous question, the state has mismanaged this for years. There was a benchmarking report done in 2019 that showed Colorado was lagging other states, and actually there's a national score. Colorado was kind of coded as red for having solvency issues in this fund. So, you know, that right there, that's a $500 million tab on business that, as business starts to recover, as hopefully our economy reopens this summer, is going to be slapped on their backs.
What else? Unemployment insurance seems like a big one. And this is separate from the fact that we've had this cratering of employment, is what you're saying. Is there something about the way unemployment insurance is managed that has caused it to be even worse?
Well, you know, I applaud the governor and the bipartisan leadership on this latest $700 million stimulus package for the state. But I was a little bit disappointed to see that the UI wasn't replenished at all with any of that fund, that money as well, because again, this is going to be a tax on business directly, and it will be automatic. So when you look at that, that's $500 million. How do we get to $1.8 billion? Well, I'd encourage you all to go to our full report, which is commonsenseinstituteco.org, because we outline all of the many different taxes and fees and regulations coming on the back of business. Paid leave, family and medical leave, you and I have talked about this before, but that will be almost $1.3 billion a year starting in 2023.
That's a crazy amount of money. I was just about to ask you about that one, too. And that got passed on that last ballot there to grant a whole bunch of extra benefits, which are supposedly divided between the employee and the employer. And I guess the contributions come from those, but a huge amount coming from the employer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. And again, you can't have a recovery without jobs. If business doesn't exist, we don't have jobs. If the costs are too high, business can't exist. So again, the question and the kind of call out to policymakers is, we've already had low unemployment rates. We're struggling as a state. We're kind of going from top of the list to almost last across the board. And you saddle on these other kind of taxes, fees, and regulations, and what's going to happen? It paints a picture that maybe Colorado will not recover from this recession quite as quickly as we did from the Great Recession. And you have to remember, coming out of the Great Recession, Colorado really led the way. We fostered a great business climate. We supported job creation.
Oil and gas was huge.
It was huge.
Yeah,
it was huge. And we actually point that out in this report that, you know, Senate Bill 181, which was legislation passed 2 years ago, and there's been a lot of rulemaking from the COGCC, that potential harm that's done in terms of taxes, fees to business as well has been astronomical. The Colorado Oil and Gas Association actually estimates that the past 2 years have added $200 million in costs to doing business in Colorado.
Well, the good news is oil and gas only employs about 15 people across the state, so we'll barely feel that. One other thing on the unemployment insurance thing is that apparently the system is so easy to defraud that people from prison are able to apply for unemployment insurance. That has run rampant to the point where the AG's office now has said, look, we want to partner with the Department of Labor to try to go after all of these fraudsters. And I think what I heard the Attorney General say is more money goes out of that building for fraud than it does for legitimate unemployment claims. So we can add that to all the other mismanagement. There needs to be some big changes there. But let's talk about some of these other things. What are some of the other burdens that you see? Family Act was a big one. What are the other ones coming for small businesses?
Sure. And let me just one quick stat that I forgot to mention, because I like stats. I work at a research institute.
That's right.
But
yeah.
On the UI real quick, so Colorado right now, we're one of only 19 states in the nation currently reliant upon federal loans to shore up our trust fund. And we have the ninth greatest amount of money outstanding in both absolute and population adjusted dollars. And again, the company that we're keeping on those lists, one of the nine states, you know, we're talking California, Illinois, it's not a place we want to be. So we're reliant on the feds right now, and we're taking loans from them to shore up our fund. And fraud, you're right, has been a big component of that. I hope that they resolve that and fix that. To your second question, what are some of the other ones? Again, there's a lot of detail in the report on our website, but there was a affordable housing vendor fee. That's nearly $50 million that's been added. There is a few different tax expenditures for state education funding, ranging from $32 million up to $50 million. And then what we also did in the report is we said, hey, let's look at the cost to business, but let's also look at the increase in higher administrative costs to the state, to state government for implementing all these new regulations, taxes, and fees. And we estimated that those public sector costs are nearly $700 million. And I don't have to tell you that that money has to come from somewhere. And if it doesn't come from efficiencies inside the state budget, we know where it will come from. It will come from the private economy.
The other thing I think that people, at least listening to 710 KNUS, appreciate in a way that many under the Gold Dome and other parts of the state don't, and that is what you said earlier, which is you make business more expensive to run, you get less of it. You make employees more expensive to have on the payroll, and you get less of it. I think there's a real sense here that we can just keep piling on top of business owners and job creators, and they'll just be able to pull the money out of the money tree and make everything work all right. That's just not how it goes.
Yeah, it's pretty funny and ironic to me, actually, that these taxes, fees, and regulations are very literally at war with the easy money policies of the Fed Reserve. They're at war with President Biden's trillion-dollar stimulus package. I mean, if President Biden's stimulus is intended to be a sail on the boat of our recovery, this parade of higher taxes, fees, regulations from state policymakers are truly an anchor that is going to hold business back.
Great analogy. This is not necessarily a partisan thing either, because you also talk about the state income tax cut, which we also passed just last year.
Yes. Yeah, we made sure to include all of those. I mean, that's, you know, it decreased our income tax rate from 4.63 to 4.55. It was the biggest tax decrease in, 20 years, I believe. So a savings of $154 million annually.
Bam.
And we wanted we wanted to make sure that we included, you know, that not just the cost, but anything that might offset that as well.
Now, some of these things are as of yet unquantifiable, like, you know, the repeal of the Gallagher Amendment, the emissions reduction for utilities and all that. How do you start to try to factor some of those in? When can we know what damage, if any, has been done to the small business owner from that?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have actual costs on every single line item, but it's common sense. We know that there will be costs incurred with all of those different bills and proposals that have passed. We have not quantified them, though. I think that the biggest takeaway is that when you look at the cumulative impact, we're talking $1.8 billion conservatively. In reality, you and I know that this number is probably much larger. And not only are we the best in the nation, and perhaps on the most important test of all, which is, are our people working again? We're dead last. So when you talk about sustained growth and
we're dead last in what, Kristen? We're dead last in what?
In jobs, our unemployment rate.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry to cut you off. That's horrible.
No, that's okay. Yeah. I mean, but you look at all of this and it's, again, how are our job creators going to get people back to work, going to employ more people with all of these taxes and fees that are coming at them on their back?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, look, none of these things are going to be repealed. My guess is regardless of who's in control of the legislature, as you know, once you start to give someone a benefit like this Family Act thing, it's kind of hard to carve it back. I imagine there's more pain in the future as we assess the true damage of that. I know we're going to have Chris on in the next hour to talk about this public option for health care and the potential impacts of that as well. But it feels like Colorado has gone from in just a very short period of time, one of the most business friendly states around, to one that says you're just not a focus for us. We see you as a cash cow and we want to fund all of these other high minded, make me feel warm on the inside social programs on the backs of job creators.
I think you're exactly right, and that's really what this report is intended to do. It's, to show that it's easy to look at all these issues one-off, right? But when you look at the cumulative impact, it's pretty devastating to see how our state is positioned as we think about economic recovery. And you can take or leave rankings. There's a lot of rankings out there, but I will point everybody to one, the U.S. News World Report, which the governor and others like to tout a lot as Colorado, you know, being top. Well, they just released this past week their new rankings, and we have plummeted to almost last in opportunity and fiscal stability, where prior we were leading the pack, and our state has lagged behind across the board in those metrics. So you can see that this is starting. Even national rankings are starting to take wind of this, even though a lot of these policies haven't come into full effect yet. And it's concerning for business as we move forward.
And to be clear, this cannot be laid at the feet of COVID alone.
Yeah, thank you for asking that, because nobody questions that the COVID recession is worse than the Great Recession. We all know that. But it stands to reason that if Colorado recovered faster than other states from the Great Recession, we could be recovering faster coming out of COVID too. But the trouble is our unemployment rate doesn't show that. And we have this onslaught of taxes, fees, and regulations coming as well. So that should really be concerning to everybody.
Kristen Strom, CEO of the Common Sense Institute. Where can folks go to find this and all those other great reports that you and the Super Smart Economist put together?
Well, thank you for letting me do a PBS plug, because we do rely on support from individuals. We're a nonprofit. We do not take any government funding. So if you're interested in supporting our research and the work that we do, please visit commonsenseinstituteco.org.
That's fantastic. Thank you, by the way, also. I imagine you've been up for hours, but thank you for giving us some of your 7 a.m. hour, as you're probably awaiting the storm that has yet to really rear its ugly head.
Yeah. You know, as a Coloradan, I didn't believe it, so.
You know, I just think it's got to be one of the easiest jobs in America is meteorologist in Colorado. You're never held accountable for being wrong, and there's just no way to be right. There's no matter what the models tell you, you can't be right.
No.
Kristen,
you stay safe in this blizzard.
You too. We'll talk to Chris a little bit later, but thank you. Kristen Strom from Common Sense Institute. Thank you for joining us. Go to that website, commonsenseinstitute.co. And pull down this study. I've got the little synopsis of it, but there's a lot more detail in there. Troubling stuff that you ought to be aware of, especially as we're in this legislative session where they're trying to figure out more ways to spend more of your tax money and put more regulations on you. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Ms. Graham about another bill the legislature is considering to, I think, in my opinion, make it a lot easier for people to re-victimize folks and have a lot of less accountability for doing it. Until that time, George Brockler on The George Show at 710 KNUS.
Now, back to The George Show with George Brockler on News Talk 710
like
KNUS.
Legs all runny. She thinks crossing her legs is funny. She looks down her nose.
We're back here on 710 KNUS. Like George Brockler with you here on The George Show. We are pleased to be joined by someone I've gotten to know pretty well. I want to say for all the right reasons, but it's not. In a perfect world, I would have met Ms. Graham in a supermarket or at a rally or something, but that's not how we came to know each other. Cindy Graham, thank you for joining us on 710 KNUS. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry, Cindy. I just did a little bit of intro for you. Hey, tell people a little bit what you want to share with them about your background and set the stage for this discussion we're going to have.
Okay. My name is Cynthia Gelston Graham. My son was murdered in 2009, and I am a member of the Colorado Victims for Justice. And what we do is we track various bills that are coming into the legislature and see which and track the, pretty much it's the crime bills that we track and try to make and try to catch the ones that are not good for victims. And we try to be judicious and we try to be fair. We just want an equal voice. We don't want to have more of a voice than, say, the perpetrators, but we want to at least have an equal voice and to be heard. And the bill that I wanted to talk about today was the House Bill 21-1209. And this bill concerns offenders who have committed offenses when under the age of 25. And
now tell us about that bill. It's in the House right now. It is it has House sponsorship of Representative Gonzalez Gutierrez and Doherty. And on the Senate side, it's Pete Lee. I'm not familiar with the House members, but Senator Lee, who'd been in the House for a long time in the Judiciary Committee, I think he's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Long time, you know, criminal justice reformer, for lack of a more official or better title. But tell us about this bill.
Well, this bill basically says that anyone who commits a felony offense is eligible for parole after serving only 50% of their sentence or at least 15 years in prison, provided that they have behaved themselves and not had any penal discipline violations in the last 5 years. Code 1. Violation in the past 10 years. And this all sounds very reasonable, but the problem is that these people...
Hey, Cindy, we keep losing you. You keep clicking out. Yeah, you keep clicking out. We'll call you back and try to get a better connection, but wherever you're standing, we're losing you about every other sentence or something like that. So we'll try that here. Listen, the bill that she's talking about is House Bill 21-1209. You can find all these bills, by the way, on the legislature's website. And if you just Google it, it will take you there. It's very, very user-friendly. You can download the text, see what happened. It's good. You can also listen in on some hearings. This particular bill is another attempt to diminish responsibility for prison. And I think part of the disconnect, do we have Cynthia back? Hey, Ms. Graham, are you back?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that sounds a lot better. I was saying that part of the disconnect with members of the legislature in power right now is that they view prison as only existing for rehabilitation purposes and to protect the public. And while those are two legitimate purposes, the other one that I think it has just completely lost sight of or ignored is that it is there for punishment, that people that are serving giant sentences have earned those sentences. They didn't just accidentally commit a crime that resulted in 40 years or 50 years in the Department of Corrections.
Correct.
So I'm sorry, you were talking before about what this bill does. Now, there had been a lot of focus on offenders who were younger than 18 years old. And some of that was occasioned by a case called, I think it's Miller v. Alabama, that said you can't sentence a 17-year-old mass murderer to life without parole automatically. And so Colorado said, oh, well, we're going to take your cue there, Supreme Court. And they went and watered down the sentencing to the point where murderers, even mass murderers who are 17 years old, are able to get out of prison in as little as perhaps 25 years, which is crazy. This bill then expands some of that logic and thinking to how old?
24.
24 years old. Now, I haven't gone and looked, but my guess is we've had members of the legislature who were 24 years old. Now, this bill says this bill does not apply to people who are serving life without parole sentences, right? If they commit second degree murder, yep, they get their sentences cut in half. But if you've committed first degree murder or you're serving a sentence for some type of aggravated sexual assault, this doesn't apply to you. But there are a whole mess of other charges that fall below this. Let me play devil's advocate with you, Cindy. You know, people under the age of 24, especially dudes, their brains just aren't developed and they should not be held accountable at the same level as regular, fully matured people. What do you think of that?
Well, basically what they've done is they've cherry-picked portions of the neuroscience research to fit their narrative, but that's not what the neuroscientists say. The empirical evidence linking neurodevelopment processes and the adolescent real-world behavior still remains pretty sparse. But also, the neuroscientists don't want to really be involved in this argument because it's a societal issue. Because it also says here in some, because I've got all this research sitting here in front of me, some parts of the reasoning and the empirical thought processes in the brain don't mature till the third decade. So what are we now going to say, that 30-year-olds aren't responsible?
Yes, I think what we're moving towards is a society that simply refuses to hold people accountable for their conduct because it blames society for that conduct. Here's in the legislative declaration of this bill that you're talking about, Cindy. It says, blah, blah, blah. The brain functioning that guides and aids rational decision making does not fully develop until a person is in his or her mid to late 20s. That kind of language tells me that we ought to be talking about increasing the age from 18 to 24 to vote. I mean, if you can't be held accountable for your misdeeds because your brain isn't fully formed, how in the world can we trust you to vote for things like, oh, I don't know, the legislature? Or the governor, or the president. How is that possible?
And join the military, sign a contract, get married.
Join the military, sign a contract, rent a car. I mean, any of those things. How can you be counted on to do that if your brain just isn't working right?
Yeah. Well, see, that's my problem with it. But one thing you said about it not being, doesn't apply to first-degree murderers. If you look at page 7, line 24, it says, if an offender who has committed murder in the first degree, as discourting element with a lot of other things, served 28 years, his or her sentence successfully, and has successfully completed this special program that they have, which is not defined in any part of this bill, they are also eligible for parole.
My God, so they've now expanded the juvenile sentencing. So 28 years, that's it. And by the way, that doesn't say only one count of first degree murder. This would get this. I'm glad you pointed this out. This would, by its terms, I'm going to check this out, may apply to the Aurora Theater mass shooter who got convicted of 12 counts of first degree murder and is serving 12 consecutive life sentences plus, I think, 3,318 years in the Department of Corrections. But those numbers become irrelevant because it looks like, if he has committed this murder, as described, blah, 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 has served 28 years of his or her sentence, they had to reduce it, they get to apply for this special program? That cannot make any sense to a right-thinking human being. How does that make sense? We want the Aurora Theater murderer to be back on the street before he's 55? Are you kidding me?
Well, I see, that's the thing, and that's why I wanted to talk to you on the program today about this bill, is that, you know, I don't think the general this, what's going on in terms of these legislations. And it's not just happening in Colorado. It's happening across the country. And
there's something else.
We have to hold people accountable for the behavior. And because it does impact public. And we don't know how good these programs are. The special program that they're talking about has only been in effect for about 2 years, so there's not really any data on it yet.
No, there isn't.
And whether or not it's effective.
One other thing that folks ought to know about is in this bill, they also changed just a little thing that may not have any significance, but you don't know the background story, and that is right above the section you pointed me out to, Cindy, which I'm going to pay particular attention to. I did not read that. To potentially apply to our Aurora Theater massacre guy. That is outrageous. But above that, there's a section that used to say the department may make restorative justice practices available to any victim or any offender who petitions, blah, blah, blah. It now changes it from may to shall make them available. Well, get this. One of the bill's sponsors, Senator Pete Lee, his wife, that is her business. Her business is restorative justice. So now we have a sponsor of a bill. Apparently, there's no conflict here. I presume somebody checks these things under the Gold Dome, creating a mandatory use of a business that his wife actually provides. Not his wife's business, but a business that she provides. That can't be right.
Well, and also, it puts the burden of getting involved in this practice on the victim, because it says a little bit further down on 16, but if requested by the victim, and the victim has to be registered with the Department of Corrections, requesting notice. So the victim has to participate, the victim has to kind of initiate.
This is crazy stuff. And how do they even come up with, why 50%? Why not 70% or 30%? There's no science there. This is all just this ridiculous far left policy wish list stuff to hold people less accountable for their crimes. Frankly, if someone has engaged in first degree murder and they've been held accountable, I think as a society, I don't ever want to see them on the street again. Once they've taken everything a person has and everything they're ever going to have away from them, we don't put them to death anymore in Colorado. We let them live. Hell, we help them live. We give them health care. We give them education. They can have all the hopes and smiles they want behind bars. But why in the world would we create a world in which you can murder another person or persons in cold blood and then just a couple decades later show up at the mall with them over Christmas? How is that possible?
Yeah. And there are quite a few bills like that coming through the legislature, and I just found out about one last night that will affect juvenile sentences as well, and I haven't had a chance to really delve into it, but it looks like it's headed to the floor for a vote, and so it's just, yeah, I shake my head. And I just spoke to another mother who lives in Florida, but whose son was murdered here by two juveniles, and she just beside herself because of this bill, because it directly impacts her, and it likely will impact me as well. And
you bring up a good point. It re-victimizes victims. And here's the position it puts prosecutors in, is when we're negotiating plea bargains with the other side, in part, it is based on a number. If we go to trial, it's to convict them. And we share this information because the Constitution and good sense requires it with victims and say, hey, you don't have to worry. If they take this deal, they are not going to get out of prison for a minimum of X number of years. And this bill comes along in the rearview mirror, changes all of that and makes liars of us and tells victims who could have slept at night for, let's say, 2 decades, 3 decades, 4 decades. Uh-oh, not so fast. Not so fast. That murderer of your loved one is going to be on the streets a lot sooner. And here's the other lie that's in here. It talks about this demonstrated, oh my gosh, what's that specific language? It's all so fuzzy and positive. Oh yeah, through observable and verified positive behavior. That's not required in this bill. There's nothing about observable and verified positive behavior. The only thing that's required is you can't have negative behavior. If you didn't get popped for a big time violation like shanking another prisoner during the 5 years leading up to your parole eligibility, you're going to end up on the streets. I don't understand how we get here as a state.
Yeah, and I just, it really, really troubles me because what happens is, and and it happened to someone that I know, is that the person who murdered their child had been in juvenile. They let him out, and 2 weeks later, he murders.
Oh, boy.
And they pull him back in to finish his juvenile sentence, and then nothing happens.
Sydney Graham, thank you for coming on and sharing this with us. I think you did a great job. We'd love to have you back on in your role with the Colorado Victims for Justice to talk about this bill and others as they progress through the legislature. Can you do that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Enjoy the snowstorm that hasn't happened yet. Stay safe.
Let's hope it doesn't.
Amen to that. Talk with you soon, Cindy. Thank you. Hey, we're going to cut away for a break. We're going to come back and be joined by another member of this group, Ray Harlan, to talk about another one of these crazy bills. My name's George Brockler. It's The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS.
The George Show with George Brockler on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We're all the way back here on 710 KNUS. George Brockler on The George Show. Governor Polis has declared Saturday, March 20th, that's 1 week from today, as Meat Out Day, a statewide meat-free holiday in Colorado. If you haven't had the chance to read his proclamation, it may be because it hasn't been publicly released yet. At least I couldn't find it the last time I looked. It may be up there now. That may be unfair. But originally reported in like the Vegan News or something like that, where he goes out of his way to disparage one of the agricultural industries that drives the economy in the state of Colorado by calling meat and other animal products bad for you, unhealthy for you. You should eat twigs and berries and all that stuff. So steaks canceled, pork chops canceled, buffalo wings canceled. In honor of Polis's most unpopular proclamation, 710 KNUS is giving you the chance to win the ultimate in meat preparation. A brand new, what? I'm not eligible. Damn it. A brand new Traeger pellet grill and smoker with Wi-Fi, guaranteed to seal in the juices and make your meat marvelous. It's the 710 KNUS Smoke 'em if you got 'em giveaway. Go to 710knus.com to sign up for your chance to win. A friend of mine has one of these things. It has changed the way, I think they've consumed more meat now than ever, but has said that, look, he can monitor all this stuff from his phone. You don't have to be a grill master for this Traeger thing to be awesome because of the Wi-Fi thing. It will tell you stuff on your phone, like now it's time for this, now's the temperature, add more pellets, and it's got an automatic pellet thing, all these. Tremendous. I wish I could compete for that. I may just quit in order to compete for that special thing. But 710KNUS, go to the website. Now, listen, we were going to have, and we still are, Ray Harlan from Colorado Victims for Justice. We went along with Cindy, and appropriately so. We had to do this little reader thing. So I asked Ray if he'd come back on at 8:26. He's going to talk about another bill, Senate Bill 21-062, I think also sponsored by Senator Pete Lee and also Representative Adrian Benavides. This is a jail population management tool. You will be maybe not shocked, but certainly surprised and concerned about what the legislature is trying to do with people who victimize you in terms of returning them to a place where they can continue to do that with just the most minimal of consequences. Now, we only have a few minutes left, and if you race to the phone to tell me your Moderna thing, I'm going to put you on at 303-696-1971 because that's what we ended the last hour with. But I wanted to talk with you just a bit about these two calls that we had. We had Kristen Stroman from CSI. Really got to go to that website, that Common Sense Institute, co.org website. They have so many studies on there. We're going to hear after the top of the hour from Chris Brown, who's, I don't know if he's their chief economist or economist extraordinaire. It's one of those fancy titles that looks nice in script on a business card, gold foil, of course. And he's going to talk to us about this public option for healthcare, which I'll be honest with you, I think that we've lost the battle for education here over the last couple decades. And when I say we, I mean constitutional conservatives, because we've gotten to the point now where super smart, otherwise well-intentioned kids are growing up believing that government exists to make life easier for them, that government exists to provide them with a safety net from life, and that government is there to provide them with things, whether it's a free education or roads that someone else pays for, or transit that someone else pays for, or healthcare that someone else pays for. I don't think you really have to look past the COVID to see the benefits, at least of having some private sector involvement in this thing. But there are folks out there who want to create a public option, which would create a competitor to the private market. And government can't fairly compete with the private sector because it has the ability to compel. It also has the ability through mandates and laws. It also has the ability to budget what it wants, print its own money. This is not going to go well for Colorado. And Chris's study here is going to talk to us a little bit about what's happened. We heard from Cindy Graham. Now, she was super nervous about coming on here, but I thought she did a great job talking about a bill that is going to cut sentences in half. And I got to look at this section. It strikes me now reading it, and I want to read it in the full context of the rest of the words. I could be wrong, and I'll correct myself if I am, that this might apply now to the 24-year-old who walked into a movie theater at the corner of Alameda and 225. Boy, 9 years ago, coming up this July, my God, 9 years ago, and tried to murder hundreds of people, brought four different weapons, including an AR-15 style rifle, a 12-gauge shotgun, two handguns, two Glocks, and 700 rounds of ammunition, and handcuffs to lock the doors, the double doors to some of the theaters so people couldn't escape. This guy came there with the intention of being the biggest mass murderer in the history of the country. He had researched Columbine before he did it. And now these super smart folks here under the Gold Dome want to make it possible for him to be paroled by the time he's my age, by the time he's in his early 50s. How in the world can that be justice? And frankly, I don't care if every doctor with a PhD behind their name came out and said he is certified absolutely harmless to the planet Earth. You kill 12, you injure and maim, including in that group, 70 others on your way to trying to kill hundreds. You should never, ever again take a free breath of air just out of pure punishment. And that's in part the reason that we have prisons. It's not just rehab, and they could sure do a better job of that. They should have more resources for that. It's not just preventing future crime, but that's a big one. It is to punish people. And this bill here that Cindy talked about is trying to say, well, we really just don't think punishment's that big a deal. We'd rather see these people back out on the street. I don't understand why that is. Nonetheless, we're going to have a conversation about jail population management tools with Ray Harlan in the next hour. But when we come back, it's going to be all Chris Brown all day long from the Common Sense Institute. Well, at least for the first segment. But until that time, my name is George Brockler. You're listening to The George Show. It is 710 KNUS.